Hi, I'm Dennis Prager, and welcome to my home for another fireside chat. While I light up, enjoy the opening to Tchaikovsky's Fourth. This is my first love, classical music. I ought to do one show on it. I mean, on my radio show and one fireside chat. All right. It's the most... That's probably the most loud opening of a musical piece. It's very powerful. Tchaikovsky's Fourth Symphony. By the way, when I was doing this, it wasn't just waving my hands. I do conduct. And I believe I will be conducting this summer at the Walt Disney Music Center, which is the Carnegie Hall of the West Coast. I'm serious about music. But I knew I was not cut out to be a musician. I was cut out to talk about what's on my mind. I knew that in high school. I was very, very lucky that at a very early age, I had a sense of purpose. That's what a lot of people lack, not just in high school, 50 years later. You know, one of the 10 books that most influenced my life, which, by the way, you'll find at DennisPrager.com, there's actually the list of those books. One of them is Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, Frankl. He was a Jewish psychoanalyst, went through the Holocaust. He was in one of the death camps, one of the concentration camps. I don't remember which one. I think Auschwitz, though. And he came out with a very interesting theory, which affected me very deeply. He said that the greatest human need is meaning. You cannot be happy without meaning. You know, Freud thought it was sex, essentially. But there are people who live without sex, and if they have meaning, like, for example, a Catholic priest or a Catholic nun, they have a happy life. So you can live without sex and be happy. That's not my recommendation, but you can do it. But you cannot live without meaning and be happy. The problem, and it's so true, by the way, that one of the big problems is that people get meaning, people get meaning from the wrong things because they so ache for meaning. You know, the worst things, you know, communism gave millions of people meaning. It was a horrific doctrine. Communist societies killed more people than anything else in human history. In China, 60 million alone. Russia, between 20 and 30 million. Soviet Union, to be precise. Cambodia, a third of the population. Nazism gave a lot of Germans meaning. It's so that the pursuit of meaning is really, really important. The problem is, what will give you meaning? That's the big problem in life. What will it be? The great appeal of leftism is that it gives people meaning. And so the political and the economic become their meaning. And it's very hard to wean people away from even erroneous doctrines when it gives their life meaning. I've never quite understood why just some basic moral principles are just not enough for meaning. Like, love your neighbor as yourself, live and let live, and a whole host of other things. And the American system, I think is the best. Gives me a lot of meaning. Liberty, e pluribus unum, in God we trust. Makes my day. Anyway, just some thoughts on this fireside chat. That's what I love about it, because it's just some thoughts. What's on my mind? I deal well with silence, because I'm always thinking up these ideas. My wife loves to be constantly stimulated by intellectual input. It's a funny difference between us. So, just a thought. There is something on my mind that I want to share with you that's in the news. The attacks on Sean Spicer, the press secretary of President Trump, because he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, you know, what Assad did to his people, his use of chemical weapons on his own people, even Hitler didn't do. Hitler didn't use chemical weapons. And he has been profoundly, evilly attacked on the grounds that he was denying that Hitler used gas on Jews in the death camps. And it's so angering. It's all a lie. They're using the Holocaust as a means of attacking Sean Spicer, which I resent as a human and as a Jew. He never denied the Holocaust. He said he denied that Hitler used chemical weapons on his people like Assad used it on his people. Now, you know what we dug up? And it's not we. I think it was Real Clear Politics, I believe. But we found it. My producer on my radio show found it. You ready? I played it on my show. You should hear it. And that is Chris Matthews, Hardball in 2013, 4 years ago, said Hitler never used chemical weapons. Just those words. In passing, talking about Assad using in 2013 chemical weapons. Nothing. Nobody said a thing because there's nothing to say. Hitler did not, in fact, use chemical weapons on his own people like Assad did on his people, and that's it. End of issue. It's a non-issue. And you have these vile, like the Democratic National Committee. See, I don't care that I differ with Democrats. I care when people stoop to doing things that are evil for the sake of politics. It's evil, and I don't use that word lightly, to attack Sean Spicer for denying the Holocaust or being an anti-Semite. Remember all of this? Anti-Semites are going to come into the administration when Trump is elected. This whole hysteria. It was all hysteria. I'm a Jew. I'm a committed Jew. I'm a Jewish leader. I know it sounds boastful, but I have to give you my credentials in Jewish life. I've written two books and probably 500 articles on Judaism. I wrote a book on anti-Semitism. I know when there's an anti-Semite, believe me. Trump is no anti-Semite. His administration is not anti-Semitic. This was all a lie. It was all hysteria. And then, they said, well, look at all these Jewish community centers that are getting these calls that they're, you know, bomb threats. And it turns out that first they discover about a dozen of them were called in by a black radical. And hundreds were called in, it turns out, by a Jewish kid in Israel, an American Jewish kid living in Israel who's a nut. He's so nutty they didn't even take him into the Israeli army because he's got too many problems. But that's not the point. The point is it wasn't done by anti-Semites. Or, you know, Trump's people, you know, white, racist, supremacist, anti-Semites. It's all a lie. All. But if you only watch the left-wing news or read left-wing papers, that's all you will hear. I don't know. It's very hard to know how to fight this because the people who believe this live in an echo chamber. All they hear is this stuff. I was surprised that the Huffington Post would publish a guy who said that Sean Spicer was an anti-Semite. I have respect for the Huffington Post. They're on the left and all that, but they have a lot of interesting articles. But they should not publish lies, slander and stuff. There's a Hebrew saying, it has been one of the most impactful sayings I learned. I went to yeshiva, which is very deeply religious school, till I was 18. Half the day Jewish studies in Hebrew, the other half of the day secular studies in English. And there is a very famous, among people who study like this, Hebrew saying. It's a good one. Whoever humiliates his neighbor in public is considered to have murdered him. The reason it works in Hebrew particularly is to insult or humiliate in Hebrew means to, the Hebrew word is to whiten. So literally it's whoever whitens his neighbor's face, it's as if he has spilled his blood. It's just a beautiful play on the physical terms of the saying. So that's what these people are doing to Sean Spicer, and for that matter to Donald Trump. You want to oppose him? Oppose him. But you can't lie about him. My God, the left went crazy about the birther movement. People who simply said, show a birth certificate. I never had anything to do with the birther movement, but it's not nearly as vile as what is said about Trump and Spicer and the others. That's a very telling indictment of the left, what they're doing with this lie about the Holocaust and anti-Semitism and the like. Anyway, that's been on my mind. And you should take a look. The most famous Jewish, not Jewish, the most famous law professor in the country is Alan Dershowitz, who is Jewish. And he wrote that it's vile what the Democrats, and he was one of Hillary Clinton's big advisors. But he's a liberal, not a leftist. The left is vile. Liberals are not. And there's a big difference between liberalism and leftism. You want to know one difference? Do you really want to know? I'll give you one. When I was younger, liberalism taught. It was one of the basic doctrines of liberalism. That was that race doesn't mean anything. Character is everything. Race is nothing. That the ideal was to be race blind. That's the liberal ideal. We're all humans. The color of our skin is immaterial. That was the liberal ideal. The leftist ideal is race, gender, and class are everything. Okay? Just to give you one example. I want to write a piece up. Liberal position, right? Leftist position. All right, time for questions that you submit to us. Colin asks, Dennis, are you concerned that increased automation in the economy will lead to increased unemployment? I am. I'm very, very worried about it, actually. And it doesn't help when they increase the minimum wage so that fast food places, which work on very small margins, or other restaurants, privately owned, as opposed to the chains, they'll just have you click on an iPad at your table, and you'll order that way. It's very distressing to me what'll happen. And obviously, it's not just a minimum wage issue; it's just a technology issue. And it's not the same as it was, let's say, at the turn of the last century, when the car came about, everybody who worked with horses, the horseshoe maker, went out of business. I understand it's a tragedy, but so for every horseshoe maker who lost a job, somebody made a job fixing, repairing brakes, right? Or carburetors. So that's fine, but it soon they'll have perhaps automated carburetor fixers. With cars moving more and more to computerized parts, in any event, it'll be easier. So I do worry about it. And if there is self-driving vehicles, think of all the people employed who drive. Like truck drivers, obviously. Taxi drivers. Uber drivers. Limo drivers. So I do worry about this. I don't know what can be done, but it's that I do, yeah. John asks, Dennis, what's your advice for young people who are trying to plan for professional success? Did you know what specifically you would do from a young age? I had no clue what I would do. I totally understood what I want to do with my life. I wrote it in my diary I kept in high school. I want to influence people to the good. That's what I wrote. That was, and that hasn't changed one iota. That's all I want to do. And that's what I'm doing now on a scale I never imagined I would be able to do. Because who could imagine an internet? I never imagined I'd have a national radio show. I didn't know. So I knew, I knew I didn't want to do any of the normal things. I didn't want to be a businessman. I didn't want to be a doctor. I didn't want to be a lawyer. So what's left? And I was very, very worried, actually, in my junior year in college. I never forget, I said to my friend, I said, I don't know what I'm going to do to make a living. I know what I want to do in terms of purpose, but I have no idea what I want to do, what I'll do. How do you get paid to tell people be good or what you think? And I was very fortunate that I, at the age of 20, I was sent to the Soviet Union. Obviously, it doesn't exist now, but the Soviet Union. Because I had very fortuitously, I had studied Russian in college. I knew Hebrew from all of the Hebrew studies. So I was the perfect candidate to be sent into the Soviet Union to help Soviet Jews who were quite repressed under the communist regime. I brought in Jewish items and I brought out Jewish names of people who wanted to leave. So I went for a month. I was sent for a month. It was a tough month. Meeting people at midnight and just talking while walking, because if you sat down, people would overhear you. It was a tough month. But when I came home at 21 years of age, I immediately was sent around to give lectures on Soviet dissidents, Soviet Jewry, because how many people went to the Soviet Union, how many people learned as much as I did, and I was at the Russian Institute of Columbia University, so I began lecturing at the age of 21. The money that I received then, I gave over to the cause of Soviet Jewry. I didn't keep any of that money. But after 2 years, I called up places and I said, I could speak on other things. And I'll never forget my first paying speech. They said, how much would you charge? And I said, and I was nervous. I was dripping sweat. I was so nervous to ask for money for myself. I said, $35. And I was certain if she said, we can't afford that, I would said, okay, 25. So she said, fine. And she probably thought, we're going to get a speaker for $35. I said, and also taxi fare to Queens. I was living in Manhattan because I was at Columbia. And it turns out the taxi fare was way more than the fee was. But I began by lecturing. I lectured a lot. And I made a living that way. I made a living teaching at college, Brooklyn College. And, one thing led to another, and finally a radio show in California, and then a national one. But I was very lucky, I've always felt this way, that I could start so early doing what I most wanted to do, which is speak to people.
and make a living doing it and writing. So you don't always know what you want to do for professional success. It's, but obviously you have to do something. If you can do what you love and what gives you meaning, you're very lucky. But if you're not doing what you love, you're still very lucky. And most people do not have jobs that, I don't know about most people, a lot of people don't have jobs that fill them with meaning. Right? Let's be honest. So what do you do? The answer is, you make it give you meaning. My dad, may he rest in peace, my dad wanted to be a doctor. But his parents had no money to send him to medical school. His first love was medicine. He never got to medical school. He became an accountant, a CPA, a certified public accountant. And he did something that I really admired. I didn't realize it at the time when I was a kid. I realized it later when I left the house as an adult. He infused being an accountant with tremendous meaning. He really was committed to finding ways for his clients to pay as little or as few taxes as possible while still being legal. As many times as his clients were audited or he was always found to have been perfectly within the law. But every client was like a detective mystery to him. How can I save my client money? Another thing is he would talk to his clients about their lives. And when people know their salaries, their income, they open up, because that's the most hidden part of people's lives for whatever reason. And what he did was he would give them advice on their marriages, on their kids, on whatever it was. So he was sort of a psychologist in addition to being an accountant. So he made his second choice, accountant, into extremely meaningful life. And he practiced being an accountant till 90. He did my taxes till his early 90s. And he was a great accountant. So you can invest whatever you do with meaning. That's really what you have to do. So anyway, Dennis, I know George. Hi, George. How you doing? Dennis, I know a woman who was 10 weeks pregnant. Her child will be born with a severe disorder and will likely live at most a few years, and those few years will be in chronic pain. How does situation like these impact your pro-life views? That's a very, very good question. And I would never judge a woman, for example, a woman who had a Tay-Sachs child, because like my cousin did. My cousin had a Tay-Sachs child. Tay-Sachs is a disease only among European Jews and their descendants. And if the child has it, the child will die, and it is an unpleasant life, to say the least. Until then, I remember this baby, and they all die at about 3 or so, if I'm not mistaken, whatever the age is, very young age. She did not have an abortion. She was a very, very religious Jewish woman, and felt that there are no circumstances under which it is appropriate. I deeply respected that, but if she had had an abortion in that case, I would not judge it. Dennis, what does the Bible say about who gets into heaven? Well, this is an interesting question. Here is a major theological difference between traditional Christian doctrine and traditional Jewish doctrine. I am a big believer and advocate of Judeo-Christian values. But Judeo-Christian values is one thing, Judeo-Christian theology is another. There is no Judeo-Christian theology. There are Judeo-Christian values, and that I promote and believe in and know exist. This country, the United States of America, is founded on Judeo-Christian values. It is the Judeo-Christian country. Christians rooted in the Hebrew scriptures founded the United States. Okay, that's why on the Liberty Bell, there's only one thing inscribed, and it's a verse from the Torah. And these weren't Jews who inscribed it on the Liberty Bell. The Torah is the first five books of the Bible, five books of Moses. The difference here, in answer to your question, the difference is Jews think you earn your way into heaven. Christians think that you don't earn your way into heaven, that it is through the grace that made available through the sacrifice of Christ's sacrifice on the cross. That's a fundamental difference. We do believe, we Jews do believe, that God rewards the good and punishes the bad. And that's really what it is. So a lot of times Christians say to me, well, how do you know you're getting into heaven? To which I say, I don't know. That's one of the things I have to work to do. I don't know. I think that God is good and God is just, and therefore that's all I need to know. I know that there is a good God and a just God. And according to God's goodness and justice and mercy, I am cautiously optimistic that I will go to heaven. But I do have to earn it. I am a big fan of the word earn. It's partially what makes me conservative. I think I have to earn everything. So that's my answer. Bradley. Dennis, happy Passover. Can you explain why Jews don't eat bread on Passover? I wish I had some matzah here to show you. Matzah is very close to cardboard. If you want to know what it tastes like. Actually, I'm kidding. I like matzah, actually. But the Bible gives the answer. This is not a Jewish answer. I mean, it's a Jewish answer, but it's not... It's a Christian could give you the same answer if they know the Bible, and a lot of Christians know their Bible. When the Jews left Egypt, they did not have time to wait for the bread to rise, for it to ferment properly and rise. And so the unleavened bread, that's what matzah is unleavened bread, is eaten for the 7 days of Passover. And it is a reminder of what the Jews ate in the Exodus from Egypt. Judaism is an extremely tactile religion. You got matzah there? That's great. Okay. This is courtesy of my local Chabad. I much prefer this matzah, by the way, to the supermarket matzah. It doesn't look yummy. I admit it does not look yummy. But I like it. It's very thin and burned. Yeah, I guess it doesn't look very appetizing, I admit it. I like it. Especially with cheese. Right? With cheese, man, you're in heaven. And that is exactly what it must have looked like 3,000 years ago when they got out of Egypt. So we eat bitter herbs at the Passover meal called the Seder because they had a bitter life as slaves. It's a very tactile religion, as I say. And we can thank you. And we continue to keep these practices. Curtis asks, Dennis, if you were president, what would your top three priorities be? Oh, God. These are tough questions. These are the things that I have to think about. I have to say, if I were president, I would use what they call the bully pulpit a lot. My actual desire, by the way, would not be to be president. I would like to be vice president because I would like to go around speaking and telling Americans what America stands for. And I'd like to go around the world telling the world what America stands for. And These are universal values. My book, Still the Best Hope, Why the World Needs American Values to Triumph. I feel always self-conscious recommending a book I've written, but that was the book I worked the hardest on of my 7 books. It is 3 books in one. It's about leftism, Islamism, and Americanism. And it's really all you need, I think, to understand the 3 dominant ideologies of our time. So anyway, I would use it as a bully pulpit. But priorities, I think the repeal and replacing of Obamacare is essential. That's certainly one that comes to mind. I think that President Trump is following pretty much what I would consider to be a paramount in most cases. I think something that has to be done in immigration. It doesn't come from hatred of others. It's a despicable left wing. It's like the Holocaust thing I began with. They never can imagine that if you differ with the left, you actually have good, kind values in life. Remember this, it's very important. The left thinks the right is evil. The right thinks that the left is wrong. It's a big difference. But they have to think we're evil because they don't have arguments against our positions. They want open borders. I mean, let's be honest, that's what they want. That in the final analysis, that's what they want. The left in the world does not believe in nation states. They believe we are all world citizens, like Superman. Did you know that? Superman 3 years ago announced in front of the UN in his comic strip, I'm no longer an American citizen, I'm a world citizen. That's what they believe in. I don't. I think it's good to have nations. It's a nice thing. I don't want these cultures to disappear and everybody just become world. And I don't want the UN to tell us what to do. The UN is a moral wasteland. It's the worst thing I could imagine. So something needs to be done in immigration. We have a border. It needs to be enforced. I love foreigners. That's why I went to 130 countries. I love visiting other people and talking with them and laughing with them. It's one of the great joys of my life. That's why I travel so much. All right, next. Oh, that was the final question? Well, my final thought then. What is my final thought? Am I going to see you folks next week? Why not?
If you're in town, absolutely.
Yes, yes. In the meantime, visit Prager University, visit DennisPrager.com. Take a look at past fireside chats. They're all fun and I hope interesting.
Today's new video.
And a new video today with Charlie Kirk, who we're having a joint effort on campuses to offer students good, classic, conservative values instead of the angry values. They're not even values. They just get anger. You go to college to get a BA in anger. Blacks are to be angry at whites. Hispanics are supposed to be angry at the Anglos. Jews are angry WASPs. White Anglo-Saxon Protestants. It's terrible. It's such a wonderful country. Outside of the university, most people are not angry at anybody else. We get along great. So watch his video. It's about the issue of diversity. Because real diversity is intellectual diversity. Racial diversity is nothing. Because race is nothing. The human race is something. But color / race? No. And on that, a big thank you for watching. See you next week. Dennis Prager at home saying bye-bye.